Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last week in Washington, the U.S. Department of Justice announced it will not use federal law to prosecute users or distributors of medical marijuana who comply with state law. That assurance is a change. It comes at a time when 14 states give leeway to medical marijuana. More are signing up, and medical use has become a pretty broad descriptor. Some say it's the beginning of de facto decriminalization of pot. This hour, On Point Marijuana, medical marijuana, and the law. You can join the conversation. Is medical marijuana a step toward legal marijuana nationally? Should it be? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Last week, the Justice Department released a memo to federal prosecutors outlining a policy not to target patients and suppliers in states where medical marijuana is legal. Here's Attorney General Eric Holder explaining the decision.
We will not use our limited resources in the fight against the marijuana trade, against those people who are using it consistent with state law and to fight serious illnesses such as cancer or other diseases.
And here's one angle of response on ABC's This Week. Columnist George Will said the decision effectively paves the way for legalization of marijuana.
We have legalized gambling in this country over two generations. It used to be considered a sin and a crime. With no national debate and no decision moment, we just did it. We have legalized prostitution, as anyone who opens a telephone book and looks under escort can tell you. And we're probably in the process now of legalizing marijuana.
George Will, last week. Joining me today from Washington is Josh Meyer. He covers the Justice Department and national security for the Los Angeles Times. Josh, thanks very much for being here.
Very welcome, Tom.
So we know the Department of Justice was very clear in this announcement, said, you know, this is not a step toward decriminalization. They say that's not what they're up to. What is the reason that they're making this policy clear? There was some announcement early in the year, but they're really emphasizing it now. Why, Josh?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that you could say that they're making it very clear. I mean, if you just heard what the Attorney General said in the part that you quoted, he said we're not going to be going after people who use medical marijuana in the fight against cancer and other serious illnesses. But if you take California, for instance, I mean, basically you can go to a doctor and say you're suffering from headaches or backaches or stress or you know, like 100 or 200 other maladies and get a medical marijuana card. So, I mean, I guess the question is going to be how you interpret what the Attorney General's new guidelines are and how they're going to be going after them. A lot of people say that this hasn't cleared up much of anything. It is giving the states that do have laws on the books, a much more easy path to go forward with implementing those laws.
Josh, give us a little bit of the history here. 14 states now, if you include Maryland, permit use of medical marijuana. About that many again with material in their legislatures that may get them included in that number. California, right. I guess, led the way in 96, but the Bush administration was ready to prosecute anyway, even when state law said it was okay.
Right. Well, it wasn't just ready to. I think there were about 200 raids in California even after Obama got elected. There was a lot of fuzziness to the laws and the interpretation. The Bush administration's policy clearly was that federal law preempted the state law in this matter and that marijuana was illegal and that the DEA in particular could go after offenders, particularly egregious offenders, but they were going after just some of the regular clinics too. So I think in March, the Attorney General, a holder for the Obama administration, indicated that they were going to be backing off from that. But then they never did anything in terms of implementing a real policy. So there was a lot of fuzziness there, too, between March and now. So they're trying to, sort of lay down the law in terms of what they're doing. What they're saying is that, they're trying to provide, quote, clarification and guidance, unquote, to federal prosecutors and drug agents in states, and that they want to use their limited resources more to go after Mexican drug cartels and other big, bigger problems.
Meanwhile, back in California, where your newspaper is based, Josh, we read that there are something like 1,000 medical marijuana shops, dispensers in L.A. alone now. That seems like a very big number, even for a city as large as L.A.
Right. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. We actually have a very cool interactive map that you can go to that basically shows all of these and how they're popping up all over the place. And I think it's more than 1,000. The L.A. County District Attorney is trying to sort of put his foot down and say, look, you can't just set up any kind of pot clinic wherever you want or medical dispensary. There's got to be some guidelines. And he believes that that a lot of these are illegal, even if the Attorney General of the United States is giving the guidelines that he has, especially if these clinics are in it to make profits. So there's a lot of fuzziness there too in terms of who's going to be growing the marijuana, how much can you sell, what kind of profits can you make from this. This might be just the beginning of the battle, I think.
And it's obviously not just California. I'm reading here in Colorado, in recent months, thousands of young men in the early 20s have applied to doctors complaining of severe or chronic pain to get the medical marijuana card, as you describe it. And lots of them are getting them, and from a relatively small number of doctors who appear to kind of specialize in this prescription.
Right. And I think in California that's the case, too. I've heard of reports of barkers or buskers or what have you on the Venice boardwalk just calling out to people saying the doctor is in, just come right in now and you can get your card and be on your way within 20 minutes and so on. There clearly needs to be some more regulation there. In fact, just this morning, and this is another issue that has to be adjudicated, just this morning a couple of congressmen, including one from California, put in a bill that said to lift the ban on prohibiting medical marijuana evidence in federal court. And the reason they're doing that is because even today, if you are, if you're prosecuted on a marijuana possession charge or even some other charges, you are you're excluded from using the evidence of medical use or state law in compliance with state law as a defense. So if you've got a medical marijuana card. That may not be a defense in a case. So they're trying to clarify that as well.
So working to clarify that, but a lot of muddiness here and a kind of picture in motion. Josh Meyer with the Los Angeles Times in Washington, thank you very much for filling us in there today, Josh.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tom.
With us now from Washington is Peter J. Cohen. He's a medical doctor and adjunct professor of law at Georgetown University, author of Drugs, Addiction, and the Law, Policy, Politics, and Public Health. He's written skeptically about the new federal policy. Peter Cohen, welcome to On Point.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And with us from Los Angeles, California, is Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at UCLA, editor of the Drug Policy Analysis Bulletin. He's argued that the Justice Department's new policy may be a good first step in an overhaul of overall U.S. drug policy. Mark Kleiman, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you.
Thanks for the invitation.
Peter Cohen, what's your problem with the announcement last week? They're saying we've got better things to do with our scarce resources at the Department of Justice than to go after medical marijuana users. Why not?
Well, let me just say a few things. As you said, I'm a physician. I'm an anesthesiologist. Mm. I've used many controlled substances in my practice. The fact that a drug is addicting, the fact that a drug can have lethal consequences, shouldn't remove it from use as a legitimate drug. But all of the drugs that are classified as controlled substances under the Controlled Substances Act have been through rigorous review with good experimental data to indicate that they are safe and effective when used legitimately. They've all been approved by the FDA. The use of morphine for treating pain, the use of barbiturates as a sedative were never voted as referenda. They were all approved by the FDA. And my objection to medical marijuana doesn't really indicate that I think it's useless. Mm. I think there have been many, many good studies in the last few years that suggest that smoked marijuana may be very efficacious and indeed may be efficacious when other medications have failed. But it has not yet been reviewed by the FDA. It hasn't been subject to federal scrutiny. And I don't believe that drugs should be approved by a popular vote. It happens in this case to be marijuana, but I would hold the same thing for any drug.
Mark Kleiman, a popular vote is what made medical marijuana legal in California. You've got your issues, but in general, you're welcoming this and the justice move. Why?
Well, I think that given the California law, the Justice Department made the right call in saying, look, if California wants to do it this way, we've got better things to do than fight it. So I take this as a step of comedy with the state and also just the belief that there are better things to do with the resources. I'm completely on board with Dr. Cohen in saying we shouldn't be making medical decisions by referendum. And the frustration is that the federal government has made it essentially impossible to do the clinical trials that would be needed to take cannabis to the Food and Drug Administration. So the federal government asserts a monopoly over the supply of cannabis for medical research. And essentially, you can't get it. And so the result is that GW Pharmaceutical has done the work overseas and has a marijuana extract called Sativex, which is now approved in Canada and which they're trying to get approved in the U.S.
That's essence of marijuana kind of drug.
It's essence of marijuana. Mm-hmm. It's used as a spray rather than inhaled. But if that's medicine, then clearly whole cannabis is medicine. But Dr. Cohn's right. This ought to be a medicine for which you get a prescription and take the prescription to a pharmacy and get a material that is labeled according to its content of active agents, not Hindu purple kush. Mm. And so I would love to get the medical uses of cannabis away from the medical marijuana advocates and also from drug warriors. But since that hasn't happened, it seems to me the Justice Department announcement is a perfectly reasonable thing to do in the context of a basically messed up policy.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about marijuana, medical marijuana, and the law, and the meaning of a new Department of Justice memo saying it won't interfere with state choices on this front. 13 or 14 now have made using and providing medical marijuana legal. Alaska, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. Nicely alphabetical there. We're joined from California, which led the way on medical marijuana, if that's how you see it, by Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy at UCLA. From Washington, by Peter J. Cohen, adjunct professor of law at Georgetown University, medical doctor, anesthesiologist. Peter, Mark, here's a comment from our website. From Brett, says, I used to deliver food to homebound AIDS patients. Many of them used marijuana to alleviate nausea and increase appetite. This was very exceedingly helpful in their maintaining some semblance of health. Without it, they had difficulty eating, keeping medication down. That said, he writes, medical use needs to be held up to the same standard of efficacy as any other medication. I guess that's your point, Peter Cohen.
Exactly. And I agree with what Mark said. If you go back several years, Professor Don Abrams wanted to study the effects of marijuana in controlling loss of appetite and weight loss in patients with AIDS. He was unable to obtain the marijuana because the government wouldn't allow it to be imported. Now, he finally, many years later, was able to obtain the drug. Failure to allow him to obtain the drug was purely a political decision. But what Don Abrams did was perfectly reasonable. He did the study. He published it in a peer-reviewed, well-considered journal. And there have been many published studies that support the use of medical marijuana in limited circumstances. So that's one side of the story. I agree with Mark that that the government has politicized this. But I also think that the states have politicized it by co-opting the FDA. I think this is a traditional two wrongs don't make a right. What worries me is that the federal government is charged with enforcing the laws. I mean, the Constitution says the executive shall faithfully execute the laws. And it, although I agree from a pragmatic point of view, it's reasonable what General Holder has done, I think long range may be very difficult. For example, say California votes now to decriminalize marijuana. Will the federal government step in and enforce the law? The courts have clearly said that the federal law takes precedence in this. There was a case called Raich versus Gonzalez when it was made clear that the states have the power. Well, will the Department of Justice say we will not prosecute breaking the law when it's for medical use, but we will prosecute when it's for recreational use? Will this be a very arbitrary decision that's been made? And I'd be interested in hearing what others think.
Mark, do you have a problem with the application of the law here? We'll come to supply and all the rest, but on the legal front itself?
Well, it's two points here. Unlike state-level enforcement, where state prosecutors basically take what the cops bring them, federal prosecutors are and always have been selective. There simply aren't enough federal prosecutors or courtrooms to prosecute all the violations of federal law. If you bring 100 pounds of marijuana from Mexico through San Diego and get caught with it. The U.S. Attorney's Office will not prosecute that case. They'll say, if the state wants to do it, fine, but we're busy. So it's selective prosecution is completely natural at the federal level, and it's natural for the Attorney General to issue guidance about how to do that. The other thing is that the Gonzalez versus Raich case, which is a fascinating case, the court basically said, despite the sovereignty of the state, the federal law binds, and therefore the federal government has the right to enforce its laws even against state-approved action. But I think the Attorney General reasonably felt that in comedy with the state, the government shouldn't do that. I mean, not every power that you have should be used. Medical practice of medicine is a state-regulated, not a federally regulated activity. Federal government regulates drugs, regulates the pharmaceutical industry, but not medicine. That's clear in the Pure Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act.
Pardon me, so, for us lay people, what's the difference between the pharmaceutical industry and medicine?
The Food and Drug Administration tells drug companies what they can sell. It doesn't tell doctors what they can do.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And, for example, when FDA has approved a drug, a doctor can use it for an unapproved purpose because the practice of medicine is not a federally regulated activity. So I think it's perfectly reasonable for the federal government to defer somewhat to the states on a medical question. If California, there's a referendum going to be up in the fall to legalize marijuana production generally, and I don't think the Attorney General would put up with that, and I think he'd be right not to put up with that.
And then we'd be back in the feds versus the state situation. I mean, we had an interview on NPR recently talking with L.A. City Councilor Dennis Zinzine about the planned crack down there. Maybe you can tell us about it. But the councilor was saying that crack, they got these 1,000 marijuana shops. He said it's not based on hostility to medical marijuana, but to wider, what he thought should be illegal use and sale.
We all support it. It's been abused, and it's simply a mask for recreational use of marijuana with the doctors who write prescriptions at will for different dollar value, whether it's $65 or $100 or $200. It's been abused, and that's the problem. People are abusing it, and they're simply using it to get high.
L.A. City Councilor saying there they've got a problem already with abuse of the system. Let's get a call from Henderson, Kentucky. Arthur, you're on the air. What do you think?
Well, thank you, Tom. As a member of the Marijuana Policy Project, I sincerely hope this is the beginning of a new conversation about changing these draconian, terrible laws concerning marijuana. It should be legal. It should be a transaction for citizens who want to purchase to be able to go to Costco or Walgreens to buy their product instead of going to an armed gang member who might take your money or shoot you, and the money that leaves the country, it could be a very good thing to balance our budget or to pay for health care.
But Arthur, are you saying put marijuana at Costco and Walgreens for medical use or for general use? How do you look at it?
Well, I think it should be for general use. There's never been a death overdose from marijuana, and every year thousands of people die from overdose of alcohol and other illicit substances. And additionally, the testing agent should be changed from a urine screen that demands a 30-day proof of sobriety to a blood test, because other substances leave your urine in 5 or 6 days. I mean, like crack,
mm-hmm.
crank, heroin.
Mm-hmm. Arthur, we've got the perspective. And Mark Kleiman in L.A., let me bring that to you. I mean, is that the voice of the people that helped push through your medical marijuana law? Is it a kind of Trojan horse, or maybe not even that cloaked, push for wider decriminalization?
Among the advocates, the push was very much a push for recreational use. Dennis Perrone, who was one of the sponsors of that original initiative, was famously quoted as saying that all marijuana use is medical because marijuana is good for you. But that's not what the voters thought they were voting for. When the opponents of Proposition 215, which was the name of that referendum,
mm-hmm.
said this is marijuana legalization, the proponent said, "Oh no! That's just a scare tactic. This is about getting medicine to patients." Now the mask has somewhat come off, and the director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws has openly said, "Well, we virtually legalized marijuana in California." I have said to my friends in the drug policy reform movement that they're building up a karmic debt they really don't want to pay. I don't think the voters like being
fooled with,
and their response to one of them to me was, George W. Bush got reelected. So I had to admit that that was.
But is California on a path where it may be, in a head-on collision with the federal government in the next year or two on general marijuana use? Is that where you're headed?
I am told by people who follow this stuff more than I do that the straight legalization referenda are not likely to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as long as the mask of medical use remains on, probably the federal government will hold its hand.
Peter?
I think these are very important points, and I've been very careful in my writings on this topic, which pretty well summarize what I've said so far, to distinguish between so-called recreational use and medical use. I think those who are advocating recreational use, some of these thoughts have a good deal of merit. I think, however, that it ought to be discussed fully, openly. And I don't think medical marijuana ought to be used as a subterfuge. And I agree that probably there are many people who are gaming the system. I think there are also many people who are genuinely and legitimately trying to access marijuana, smoked marijuana, for legitimate medical uses. We heard earlier in the program about a medication called Sativex, an oral spray which contains some of the active cannabinoids. These are legal in Britain. They're used for certain purposes in Canada. They're undergoing FDA evaluation right now in this country. Many patients have been studied. And it's only a matter of a few years before Sativex will probably be allowed.
So it's a nasal spray with an effect sort
actually,
of like
I believe it's
marijuana?
Sprayed in the mouth. I
the
believe
mouth?
It's sprayed
okay.
under
yeah.
the tongue. Mm-hmm. But yeah. it's a substitute for the whole plant. And I propose that if this drug is made legal and a legitimate medical practice, it will be prescribed, records will be kept. I think it may moot the whole question of so-called medical marijuana. If you need the marijuana, you get it from a physician.
You wouldn't need the leaf,
drug.
The bud, the bag, and all that. It would be
exactly.
in a spray.
But it will also put into open debate the real question of decriminalizing recreational use.
That would be clarifying. Not everyone may welcome that clarification. Syracuse, New York. Dave, you're on the air, Dave.
Thank you very much for your time. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed AIDS almost 10 years ago, and I have used the pharmaceutical drug Marinol at times. And it's very, the dosage is different as opposed to using the marijuana itself.
Marinol is extracted from marijuana somehow, Dave?
It's a synthetic cannabinoid.
Okay.
It's synthetic THC.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a big difference from using the Marinol as opposed to smoking.
The smoking worked better for you in terms of what appetite?
It does. The effects are limited. You can pretty much limit the effects. I use it. I've had hip replacements. Mm-hmm. Knees are bad because of a misdiagnosis originally with this disease. And there are two bills in New York right now. One's going through the Assembly. The other through the Senate. 9016 and 4041. For the medical use of marijuana in New York State, and I've contacted my legislatures, my congressmen, state congressmen, for both.
And as an AIDS sufferer there, I guess, I mean, how do you look at the call to put this in a very sort of scientific FDA wrapper and make it completely synthetic?
Great. I think it would be great. I think there are definitely more benefits to the natural use of the cannabinoids than there are the synthetics. I think the pharmaceutical companies, by producing the synthetic Marinol, the synthetic THC, I think the effects are different.
Mm. Dave, we got it, and we thank you for your call. We wish you good luck with everything. Thanks very much for calling today. I'm looking here at numbers out of Colorado, where they've got medical marijuana legal, but you know, it's just a few doctors essentially prescribing overwhelmingly 3/4 of the 10,000 marijuana permits in the state came from 15 doctors, Mark Kleiman. One doctor alone responsible for about 1/4 of the total. Now, what does that say to you? And a lot of these going to young men in their early 20s applying, complaining of severe chronic pain. I mean, you may not know the facts, but what does that say to you?
There's certainly men in their early 20s who have chronic pain. I did. But the picture in California is the same. the doctors who offer themselves as herbal recommendationists. I saw the card from one that said, "If we can't give you a recommendation, your visit is free." This is not exactly the practice of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is that of the people buying cannabis from the dispensaries in California, some small percentage, certainly less than 10%, are treating a serious disease.
And what about
a large number treating their own cannabis dependency, which is not a terrible thing to do.
Mm.
And then the balance are just getting their pot supply from a dispensary rather than a dealer. On the Marinol point, it's important to note Marinol is just a name for Delta 9 THC. It can be synthesized. It can be extracted. It's the same chemical.
Mm-hmm.
So that's no difference. The difference is that whole cannabis has another chemical in it called cannabidiol. And while THC makes people anxious, cannabidiol calms them down.
Hmm.
And so the pure THC pill has a lot more side effects than whole cannabis. And that's the argument for going the whole way. Stevex extract is all of the chemicals in cannabis. So that's much closer to the real thing.
Let me get a call right here, if I may, from Stephanie in Beverly, Massachusetts. Stephanie, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to be concise. There's a doctor by the name of Daniel G. Amen, and he's been doing a tremendous body of research with actual brain imaging over the past probably decade or so. And I have two concerns. One is his imaging shows that there is actual damage to the brain.
From what?
He does a lot of research, drugs, alcohol, just general brain function.
Are you saying from marijuana, Stephanie?
From marijuana, yes,
mm-hmm, okay.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
He has actual imaging from people who have used marijuana, perhaps not medically, I don't know.
Okay.
But he's got very good research and actual tangible data.
So you've got a damage question there, a brain damage, and what else?
The other concern is that, and especially, of course, with misuse or not, marijuana can be a gateway drug. So, probably a lot of people have variations of the same concern, but there's data out there that needs to be studied in terms of what it actually physically does to the brain and the other potential mm-hmm. for greater abuse.
Yeah, make it legal, and you may be on that path. Stephanie, thank you. Peter?
Yeah, I'd like to speak to that. It's very interesting what Stephanie said. One question I'd ask is, have these data been published in a peer-reviewed journal?
Yeah.
I don't know of anything in the literature that says that the very limited use of marijuana for legitimate medical purposes damages the brain. I think you have to distinguish between people who deeply inhale marijuana every day, many times a day, for many years, from those who are using it in limited amounts for medical use. Morphine, Demerol, all of the opioids are very dangerous drugs. The drugs that killed Michael Jackson are extraordinarily dangerous.
And legal.
And they're perfectly legal. They were misused.
Peter Cohen, please stand by. We have to take a break right here. We'll come right back to it. Mark Kleiman in Los Angeles. We're talking about marijuana, medical marijuana, and the law. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about marijuana, medical marijuana, and the law, and the meaning of a new Department of Justice memo saying it will not interfere with state choices here. 13 or 14 already legalized medical marijuana. That number, again, may be lining up to do it. You can join us on the web at onpointradio.org. Here's a comment from Joey there saying, "I think we're seeing a medicine that people want and use to good effect. Why shouldn't that become a big business?" Let's go to Martha in Detroit, Michigan. Martha, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a friend who has chronic back pain, and pot helps, but he works and his job drug tests, and even if he has a script for medical marijuana, how would that help?
Good question. We've got Peter Cohen with us from Georgetown University Law School, Mark Kleiman from UCLA. Mark, what's the California record on that front? Are you exempted from the drug test testing? I noticed the Department of Transportation rushed out last week after the Department of Justice announcement to say, you know, if you drive dangerous equipment, you know, we're cutting you no slack.
Right. And, you know, the California can't regulate workplace drug testing. So I don't know what the big companies here have done, but I assume people are at risk of that. And now in at least some counties in California, the criminal justices, the probation departments, have stopped testing for cannabis because everybody's going to have a card. So yeah, there are always puzzles here, but no more puzzles than there are for any other controlled drug. I mean, morphine's illegal and also for recreational use and also used for medicine. And the employers figure out a way around that.
Oregon is one of the states that permits medical marijuana, and I see a state senator there quoted, who's chairman of the committee that oversees medical marijuana law. This is Bill Morissette, saying he's happy, Peter Cohen, for the new Justice Department announcement. On the supply side, you know, I mean, they're talking about we've got this conflict between criminal people supplying the marijuana and legal people using it, at least as the law stands. Now, he's saying that they're floating a plan in Oregon to have the state grow its marijuana crop itself, perhaps on the grounds of the state penitentiary in Salem, Oregon. That's quite a picture. Peter, are we going to get a supply here that matches the legality of the medical marijuana use?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be inconsistent. There'd be a fair amount of surveillance of prisoners who were working in the pot gun.
He said it would be very secure.
nothing in prison is that secure, but in principle, this would be reasonable. I mean, those people who are using marijuana when other drugs have failed, I have great sympathy for them. And as I said earlier, there's a lot of information in the literature, good scientific studies that show the drug works. The question of Marinol for people with AIDS came up a little while ago. It is approved for weight loss due to AIDS, and it is approved for nausea and vomiting. Although it's approved, it's a fundamental problem. To take an oral medication when you're vomiting may be counterproductive. And one of the claims of people who advocate smoked cannabis is that they can titrate it. It's rapidly absorbed, whereas oral medications may take quite a while before they have an effect. And they claim that they're using it for legitimate use. They don't want to get high. They just want to know what they're doing. And smoked marijuana is more effective than Marinol.
What does titrate mean?
Titrate means you just take enough of it to make the nausea go away.
I see.
And since it's rapidly absorbed, you can very quickly know that you've taken enough and you don't have to overdose with it.
Let's get a call from Louisville.
If I might.
Yes.
So, Mark. So one thing is that smoking is not a good way to take a drug, right? Mm-hmm. So given that we're going to make this medically available, then either you want a spray like Sativex or you want vaporization, and there are now machines on the market to do that.
Because smoking's bad for your lungs, presumably.
Lungs, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. you shouldn't be breathing hot gases and particulates and all sorts of toxins, and there's no reason to burn the plant to heat up the vapor, the active agents. You know, you put it on a hot plate and breathe the fumes.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to be whether the use is medical or non-medical, given that the retailing is now more or less legal, it's insane to leave the growing in hands of people who are frankly criminals,
big time criminals.
Some of that stuff that's being sold through the pot shops in L.A. comes from the Mexican drug trafficking organizations, and that means we're doing a very bad thing to Mexico. So, given that you're going to legalize the retailing, then grow it on the grounds of state penitentiary, or tell the retailers to set up a co-op farm. Don't grow it indoors, because indoor growing means lots of fertilizer. Lots of fertilizer means lots of nitrogen in the material. Nitrogen in the material, if you're burning it, means ammonia in the smoke, and that's really bad. So given that this is going to be regularized to some extent, you might get rid of a lot of the bad things that happen from an illicit market. But at the moment, California is not doing that.
So you've got police out there risking their lives to stop the supply and then shops selling the same supply.
Now, it's not clear exactly where the shops are getting their stuff, but you ought to regularize that. And I think it's probably time for California to stop cutting down marijuana plants. That's probably not a very good use of state resources when we're broke.
Let's go to Mark in Columbia, South Carolina. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How you doing? I just feel like, believe it, it's going to start an epidemic with the drug. It's basically almost like legalizing drug dealing. You're going to have kids that's going to get into their parents' stash, and then they're going to start smoking it, and it's going to start a whole chain reaction. I think that it possibly should have something mandated where if the parents allow their kids to get a hold of this stuff, they're going to end up serving time, or just finding a way so that it don't affect the whole, you know, generation of kids that's coming up, because everybody's not going to be sick, but it can cause a sickness by everybody starting to smoke it, you know. And I really don't believe that this should happen if you end up in schools, and because it's a lot of stuff that's going on undercover. Now, it's going to be out in the open. It's going to be easily available just to reach into the cabinet, go into the parents' cash or their purse, then they can get it out there. So we definitely going to have to, you know, have a mandate.
Watch out for that.
Behind it.
Yeah, Mark, we hear you loud and clear. I mean, Peter Cohen, this is already a big issue with a lot of prescription drugs that are abused by others in the family.
Yeah, and, you know.
Not to mention alcohol.
Not to mention alcohol.
We do legalize drugs. We've legalized alcohol before and after prohibition. We legalized cigarettes, which are a very effective way of delivering a drug and also very harmful. So the question of legalizing is a political one, and it should be decided politically, and it should be decided with scientific input. And my own opinion is, if eventually, from a purely scientific point of view, it can be determined that smoked marijuana, not for medicine, but for recreation, is no more harmful than cigarettes and alcohol, it seems to me there are only two choices: either legalize the marijuana or go back to prohibition for alcohol and cigarettes. And we're not going to do that.
We've lived with that inconsistency for a long time.
Exactly. And, you know, I've never smoked marijuana. I would not want to smoke marijuana. I wouldn't want my family to. But in public health, you sometimes don't have the option of making the best choice. You have the option of making the least worst choice. And it may be that legalizing it is the least worst choice. It's not desirable. But we may be spending more money and putting more people in jail than is worth it with the recreational marijuana situation.
The jails are certainly very full. Let's go to Steve in Louisville, Kentucky. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. My question is, do we have the medical and the scientific evidence and proof that says that the drug should be criminalized in the first place, or has it maintained the criminal status just on legal precedent, propaganda and rhetoric from 70 or 80 years ago, going back to the time of racism and prohibition in the States?
Let's pick it up. Mark Kleiman, how about it?
Well, there's certainly evidence of damage. I'm not sure I agree with Dr. Cohen that just because we legalized alcohol and tobacco, we ought to legalize anything else that's less harmful. That would be an awful lot of drugs. I think we need to accept that as a cultural fact, alcohol and tobacco are here to stay. It's not clear that if alcohol were a brand new drug, we'd allow it for recreational use. In fact, it's pretty clear that if you simply applied the criteria of the Controlled Substances Act to alcohol, which is a drug with substantial potential for abuse and no medical use, it would be a Schedule I controlled drug like heroin. And so I'm not sure consistency is the right goal here. I would agree with the other principle, which is find the least bad solution. The main risk from cannabis is not this mythical brain damage. The main risk from cannabis is that something like 9% of people who smoke a fifth joint sometime in their lifetime wind up heavy daily users for some period of months. Well, that's not nearly as bad as being an alcoholic, but it's bad enough, particularly if that takes out your 11th and 12th grade years. And so that's the thing to worry about. It's habituation. There's a widespread belief that cannabis isn't addictive. Well, for some values of the term addictive, that's just not right. And so that's the concern. If the question is, can we show that it's less dangerous than alcohol? Oh, sure. Nowhere near as dangerous as alcohol.
Really?
But that's not necessarily very reassuring. It's true that if cannabis were, in parents' medicine cabinets, kids would be getting it from their parents. which would reduce what seems to be the natural order of parents asking their kids to get them supplies. But, you know, this is not a very large chunk of the crime problem in the U.S. It's not a very large chunk of the drug abuse problem in the U.S.
Which is not?
Cannabis. I mean, alcohol is the big abused drug, right? Of the people who abuse drugs in the U.S., about 7 out of 8, their drug is alcohol.
With the greatest social cost, you're saying?
Alcohol has huge social costs of abuse, but then you don't have alcohol dealers shooting each other
right.
the way you did during Prohibition and the way you do today with cocaine dealers. So that's the trade-off. If you make a drug legal, it will be more widely used and therefore more widely abused. But you don't have crime around the production and distribution. Mm. Take your pick.
David in Plattsburgh, New York. You're on the air, David.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
One point I want to bring up, firstly, is that I don't think the pharmaceutical industry wants to see natural medical marijuana at all. I think they want to synthesize it and be able to charge more for it because they're profit-driven companies. And to get back to the gateway drug, that just revolves entirely around the fact that it's based on the black market and that you come into contact with more illicit drugs because that's what a drug dealer does. They sell more than one drug.
Make it legal and people aren't going to want to take a next step to something harder, tougher?
Well, they're just not going to come in contact with it.
Interesting.
If you can get it from a pharmacy or grow it yourself for next to nothing and have it natural and organic and be able to dose it very well, like... Also, you don't have to smoke it, as one person brought up. It can be vaporized.
It sounds like a vote there for the natural, organic, and maybe the backyard. And Mark, I think that's part of the California picture here too, isn't it? You can grow your own in California. Is that right?
Well, if you're a patient or the caregiver of a patient, you can grow your own. And I completely agree. I mean, if I had a choice of a policy toward non-medical use. I would say people can grow their own, which is technically possible, or people can set up, you know, little nonprofit co-ops. I am terrified of what a legal marijuana industry will look like.
Why?
The industry will depend on abuse, right? 80% of the alcohol used in the U.S. is used by people who drink too much.
Mm-hmm.
So when the alcohol industry tells you we're in favor of moderate drinking, they must mean they're planning to go out of business. It's not the moderate drinkers that build those breweries. Well, the same thing will be true of illicit cannabis trade. They'll be in the business of making potheads, and I bet they'll do a pretty good job of it. I would not like to see a commercial legalization, but it seems to me non-commercial legalization is probably, as Dr. Cohen said, the least bad solution.
Peter Cohen, where do you see us headed here? On the one hand, you're saying let's go to a pharmaceutical treatment of this, take it to the FDA, maybe have it in a spray, get away from the burnt leaf and smoked leaf and all that. On the other hand, there are two things going on at once here. Mark describes in California, clearly those with a bigger agenda for legalization, very involved in medical marijuana. So you hear George Will saying, oh, we're going down the decriminalization path now. Do you see it that way or not?
I see a big movement in this country for decriminalization, but I try very hard to separate the medical question, which should be considered separately, from the question of recreational marijuana. I'm no apologist for drug use, and I certainly wouldn't want to legalize any other drugs. I chair a group called the Physicians' Health Committee. It's a group that helps physicians who have become addicted. I'm quite aware of the ravages that drug dependence can cause, but I'm also aware that marijuana is probably less addicting than alcohol, and that although alcohol is abused by some people, it's probably used safely by 85 or 90% of those who do it. And there'd be more harm in outlawing alcohol than having the present state. I don't know what's going to happen with marijuana. My guess is some state is going to try as a trial to decriminalize marijuana, and then we'll see what the federal government does. I think it'll be a fascinating exercise in law and public policy, and I hope whatever happens, it's debated openly, transparently, with all arguments on the table, so that our lawmakers can give it a fair trial, either to vote it up or down.
Mark Kleiman, what's your best guess here with the thrust of all of this? Headed toward the pharmaceutical FDA land or headed toward decriminalization of pot?
Well, just a terminological question. Decriminalization usually refers to not arresting users, right? So if you make the sales legal, as happened in California, that's more like full legalization. I think we're heading in both directions. My guess is that 5 years from now, there will be a standardized, reproducible blend of cannabis that's an FDA-approved drug.
For smoking?
For inhalation with a vaporizer. But, you know, I mean, if the studies are done, I don't think there's any doubt about how the studies will come out. And once the T-Vex has been approved, which I think it will be in the U.S. within a couple of years, it's going to be very hard to say, well, but you can't use that very same drug through a different mechanism. So I think we'll probably get that. My guess is in the longer run, we'll probably get some form of legalization for non-medical use. Again, I would hope that would be non-commercial legalization. But if I had to predict, I would predict that alcohol would be cannabis would be regulated the way alcohol is 15 years from now.
With that, we're out of time. Mark Kleiman, Peter Cohen, thanks very much to each of you. Listeners, thanks for joining us. This is On Point.